accession number 18676, Reel 6.
It was regular army, of course, and he had a very soft voice, but his eyes missed nothing, and he certainly knew his stuff. And then we got this Colonel Dolan. Difference between chalk and cheese. And it rather upset Major Keller, did this. And we thought, oh Lord, what have we got here? Because he was a regular serving officer, and he had 27 years service in, and he never let you forget that. And he would go around, and it didn't matter what it was, his favourite cry was, I haven't been in the army 27 years and not know how to do it. I'll tell you what to do. And of course he could. There wasn't anything he didn't know, at least not that we found out. He knew the army inside out, and he knew the medical corps inside out. And the other thing, he couldn't stand, what's the word I'm thinking of? Inefficiency. And the other favourite expression of his was, any man can make a mistake once, but it's a bloody fool who makes it twice, and I won't stand for it. And I tell him, we wondered what we'd got hold of here. Anyway, going back now up the line to Derna. By Thursday afternoon, it was only a trickle coming through. And not only were the lads getting a little bit worried about what was what, were also the officers. And old Dolan, he kept going around. Business as usual, business as usual. Get them in, treat them, get them out. By this time, there wasn't many coming through, not even ambulances. Friday morning, he decided, right, we'll evacuate. Well, the lines of communication was by field telephone, and it was very unreliable. Anyway, eventually he managed to raise a motor ambulance unit at RESC. And he whistled up these ambulances, and we got all the patients away by dinner time. And he said, right, business as usual, business as usual. We'll treat them in the ambulances. Anybody that needs surgical treatment, we'll give them it, and anybody else will dress them and take them through. And this is what we were doing Friday afternoon. And I can still see this Dolan with a tin of biscuits under one arm and two Dixies of tea in the other, going round these ambulances, making sure everybody got a cup of tea that could have a drink and a biscuit and such like. And the MOs were going round the ambulances and checking patients and anybody that was all right and fit to travel, right, pass them straight through. By tea time, they decided that was it, nobody else, anybody come now, straight through. And they still hadn't had any orders to move. And he kept saying, business as usual, we haven't had orders to move, till I get orders to move, we don't move. And about 6 o'clock, half past six time, the order came to move, get out. Well, we had no transport, and we had the complete equipment of a casualty clearing station at Hospital Princess Piedemont, and it had never been opened. Not a single item, not a bandage had been used. And we had to abandon it. So, by this time, there was a trickle of lorries coming through. It seemed as though it was the last remnants of the infantry that they were trying to get away by lorry. And we gradually whittled the men away. They were told to make their way as far as possible on the wagons that they were on and head for Tobruk. And the rallying place was to be the 9th Australian General Hospital. About 8:30, we got them whittled down, and there was 10 of us left. Colonel Dolan, Captain Todd, myself, and 7 men. And we hadn't seen a wagon for half an hour or more. Anyway, the staff car came. So we stopped the staff car. And what are you doing here? Nobody's supposed to be here. So Dolan told them. So I said to Captain Todd, he says, you go in this staff car, there's only room for one. He says, and about 4 miles down the road, there's a military police post controlling traffic. He says, get there. He said, and send something back for the lads. Anyway, Toddy, quite right, they said, no, he said, you'd better go. He says, you're the colonel. He says, you're waiting, tell him more weight than me. And then I was making an awful job of having to go with this Dolan. Don't think I'm running out on you. I wouldn't dream of it. I'll be back, or I'll have something back for you just as soon as possible. And he was really upset at having to go and leave us. Anyway, he went. By this time it got to about 10:30. And there's a stood up entrance to Hospital Princess Peterborough. And we had a lorry coming. So Todd, this Captain Todd, said, right, form a line across the road. He says, he's not getting past us in this one. He said, we're not risking thumbing him down and him dragging past. So we did. We stood straight across the road. Anyway, he pulled up. And Todd said, I want these men out of here. He says, I want them on the old wagon. Oh, he says, I can't take them. So Todd says, well, you're going to take them. And it was fully laden, practically, was this 3-tonner. Anyway, we climbed aboard. And off we set. Well, we only got to the first airpin on the escarpment, and it wouldn't take it. So, pile out. He says, you'll have to walk to the top of the escarpment, did this driver. He says, and I'll pick you up there. So Todd says, yes, you will. And he says, we're going up in front of you. He says, we're walking across the road. He says, you're not going to get past us. And we did. And we practically ran up this escarpment. And I won't say we ran, but it was walk as quick as you can. Anyway, about 2/3 of the way up, we're puffing and panting. And typical, I thought, oh, I'll have a fag. I got this fag in my mouth, and I was just going to strike a match. And a voice out of nowhere said, I wouldn't like that if I were you, chum. And it was an Australian. I says, what for? He says, because he says, we're going to blow this road. He says, we've orders to shoot at anybody who shows a light. Oh, I says, thank you very much. Anyway, we got to the top of the escarpment. And about 4 minutes or 5 minutes later, this wagon puffed its way up. And we climbed aboard. He was grumbling and groaning with this driver, because we were all up at cab, we were sat on roof at cab, we were sat on canvas cover at back. Anyway, we went on and we came to this CMP checkpost. And Todd stopped the wagon. Actually, the CMPs had stopped it, but Toddy also stopped it. And he made inquiries, and Dolan was there, and he'd been playing out for nearly 2 hours trying to get some transport back. And the CMPs wouldn't let him. Their orders were that everything had to keep going. Anyway, when he saw we were there, he was more or less happy. And we scrambled him in front with driver and Captain Todd. And away we went, and we finished up at this 8th General Australian General Hospital. And they showed their hospitality to us. in return for us, where we looked after them. The water supply was a big 600-gallon tank in the hospital compound. It was a tented hospital, by the way, in the form of a square, and there was this 600-gallon tank of water there, which they had bowsers filling, keeping it full because they were using it in the hospital. And we filled our water bottles. And the next thing we knew, that these Australians had switched the tap off and had tightened it off with spanners so that we couldn't get water. That was their hospitality. Anyway, we were there about 12, 13 hours. And they had a annex to the hospital down near the harbour on the beach. And the colonel of the Australians asked our old man, Dolan, could he have some men for going down to this hospital to help him out? So Dolan said yes, how many did they want? So they wanted 20 men. So of course, Joe Soap was one picked. Our sergeant in charge, Corporal Sheldon, Corporal Hodgson, and 17 men. And it was dark by this time. So they took us in a three-tonner down to this hospital. And it was a shambles. It had been bombed. Anyway, we just slept where we could that night, just out in port, to see what it was like when it was daylight. Anyway, there was five wards down there, and three of them had been bombed. But they'd been bombed 3 days previously. And then this Lieutenant Colonel come, this Australian Lieutenant Colonel, I always remember his name, Little John. So, said, you're in charge, Sergeant? I said, yes. I said, we're here to help you out, what can we do? So I said, well, you come with me, and he took me over to these wards, and I said, there was three of them. And there were still dead bodies in them. They'd got the wounded out, you know, and cleared them up, and they'd left the dead bodies there. And they'd been there 3 days. He says, first of all, he says, we'll clear this lot up. I said, no, we won't. I said, we're not clearing anything of that up. I said, we're here to help you run a hospital, not to be more field hygiene section. I said, we're not touching that. And I thought he was going to cut up tough. Anyway, he didn't. And we started helping in these two wards, and we erected another two. So that was like we had four wards going. And he went away. And there was a couple of Australian medical officers there, but I can't remember much about them at all. I can't even remember what rank they were. And we all mucked in, we were looking after these patients they had and receiving patients that were wounded in air raids and such like. And we never saw one of our officers until after tea. And it was the orderly officer of the day, and he came down. Everything all right, Sergeant? I said, no, it isn't. I said, he wanted us to clear them dead bodies out of there. I said, and I told him no. Oh, no, I said, you did right. He said, we'll get... He said, when I go back, he said, I'll arrange for the Australians to make their own arrangements for clearing them out. I said, another thing, I said, I'm not happy about the group arrangements. I said, we've had no group, which we hadn't had. We'd had breakfast with the Aussies, with the Australians, and that was all. Oh, I'll send you some rations down. So they sent us some rations down. We never saw him anymore till next tea time, next orderly officer come down. Oh, I thought, this is great. And then they started bombing us. Really bombing us 4 and 5 times a day. And of course we were near the harbour. So we were right in it. Talk about. No laxatives. And I always remember the first rail, big raid we had. And Norman Sheldon, typical. I was in the ward, and Norman, what was Norman doing? Oh, that's right, he was going around ensuring that all the guy ropes were tight and all the stakes were in really fast. And he said, oh, he says, come and look at these. He said, these pins flying in formation. And I got outside. Just as I got outside, of course, they started peeling off the mastukas. Well, I've never seen anybody move so fast in all their life. We had these, the Aussies had these air raid shelters. And as I say, you couldn't dig in because it was solid rock, more or less. And they'd built them, they'd got down about 18 inches, and then they'd built them up, and then they'd put the sideboards of lorries and such like on top, and then sand on top of them. The only thing was, they were only about 4 foot high. And they were in the form of a V, with the entrance at the point. And to get as many in as you could, you had to go in backwards. So you took a flying leap in, the first man backwards, and then shuffled his way on and opened his leg, and the next bloke, you know, this is how we were. Well, we were in and out of there so many times at that. We were only there about 8 or 9 days, and by the time we came away, we all had holes in the battle dress blouses on the back. Oh dear. You can laugh about it now, but back could. It was no laughing matter at the time. And the Aussies were. They were queer. Every time an air raid sounded, there was a fair few ACAC ones. And there was this crew of Aussies, and they had an army wagon, and they had Bren guns, 2 Bren guns screwed onto the back of this army wagon. And every time there was an air raid, they used to go flying about in this lorry, firing these Bren guns. But they'd have been far better, they'd have had a far better aim if they'd have stayed stationary. Anyway. They shot, oh that's right, about the fourth day they shot one of these Stukas down. And the pilot bailed out and he landed in the hospital, 9th Australia. And this is how can you say, how slap happy they were. And this colonel, this full colonel of the Australian General Hospital, he spent the rest of the day parading this pilot round the hospital, and he even brought him down to Beach Hospital, showed him what damage they'd done to a hospital. And this was a full colonel, as though he had nought else better to do. Anyway, after about 8 days, it was, we had to get out. At the casualty clearing station, we had to get out and get down to base. And we boarded a lighter into Brook Harbour, took it out to this merchant ship. And the harbour was literally littered with wrecked ships. And we didn't move till it came absolutely dark. And when we moved, I can still remember plainly now, there was this seaman hung over the bow boat on like a bosun's chair with a flash lamp. And he was telling the bloke up on the bow which way to steer to get clear of these wrecks. And he was passing it along to the helmsman. And this is how we left to Brook. And I can still see it now. This bloke sat on this bosun's chair with his torch. Anyway, by morning, we were way out to sea and we thought, oh, we're all right now. around about 10 o'clock. They had another go at us with Stukas, but luckily they missed us. And we got down to Alexandria, and they put us in a transit camp. We were all hoping we were going to go back to Apes General, but they didn't. They put us in a transit camp. And it's rough and ready, but still it was certainly a lot better than Tobruk. And we stayed there for about 5 days. And then we moved to a place called Ikingimaru. I say there's only about a couple of minutes left on this tape. So we'll leave it here. While we're in the transit camp at Alexandria, and we've just got to know that we're going to move to this place called Ikingimaru. So that's it, we'll finish for today, and we'll do some more another time. As I said at the end of the last tape, we got back to Alexandria from Tobruk, and we were put in this transit camp at Alexandria, just outside Alexandria up the coast. And with nothing apart from what we were stood up in and our small kit. So we were spending the time straight away re-kitting ourselves with uniforms and etc. And the colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Dolan, he was made up to full colonel and was to go to Crete as the deputy director of medical services, Crete. And they took Captain Todd, one of our nicest officers, with him as aide-de-camp. Unfortunately, things were very dicey in Crete. We were in the process of being chased out of Greece, and also they were attacking Crete. And eventually, of course, Crete fell, and Captain Todd was taken prisoner, and I never knew what happened to him. Anyway, as I say, while we were there in this transit camp, we were busy equipping ourselves. And we got a new colonel, a Colonel Waite, a Lieutenant Colonel Waite. And again, we were very fortunate in that he was a gentleman of a CO. He really was. It was here that I suddenly remembered about my film that I put in at the photographer's shop at Derna. And I thought, oh my lord, that's it, that's gone up the spout. However, I had the ticket that he'd given me, this Arab in Derna. And I suppose I was very optimistic, I kept it. I put it in a wallet that I didn't normally use. And I left it there. Well, we left the transit camp, and we went to a place called Ikingimaru, which was about 25 to 30 miles outside Alexandria, towards Mirza Matru. And what it had been a development that had started round about 1936 for a weekend retreat for middle-class Arabs. You know, businessmen, etc. And it was all dotted with these villas. There's fresh water laid on, and they all had all been trying to make gardens, and for them they had artesian wells, windmill, pumping windmill, and irrigation of the gardens with this. It wasn't drinking water, you couldn't drink it, but it was doing for trying to make stuff grow. About the only things that were successful were a type of pine tree. However, there was a 200-bedded hospital there, and we took it over, and I think it had been run by a heavy field ambulance, and they moved out. I can't even remember the name of the number of the field ambulance. And we took over straight away. Of course, there was patients in, and we were looking after, oh, I don't know how many thousands of trunks. And we were very, very busy. We were 200 bedded, and it was very rare we had more than 10 beds empty at a time. It was good training, really good training. And we still continued wherever possible with lectures, etc. Because now we were, after our nursing orderly class 2, which meant more money for us. While we were there, we were improving the hospital all the time. And one of the things that they did was, instead of having just the track round the hospital and between the wards, etc., that was made at Tarmac Adam. And of course, that was a big improvement. It cut down the dust tremendously. Anyway, we got settled in there very nicely. And it was a big improvement. And another improvement that happened while we were there, just after we were there, I don't know how they managed it, but Corporal Hall, the cook, was posted to base, REMC base depot at Cairo. And a couple of days later, we got this Sergeant Cook, a Sergeant Reed, and he was a First World War soldier. He'd been on the reserve, he was a postman, but his hobby was cooking. Oh, you've never known such a difference it could make to a place. Anyway, to cut a long story short, he arrived one dinner time. And as I say, he was a First World War bloke, so he was well into his 40s. And Sergeant Major handed him over to me to show him the ropes. I was wardmaster at the time, day wardmaster, responsible for running the whole hospital, because we had no sisters at that particular time. And I showed him round and everything else. I says, you want to go down to the cookhouse? No, he says, I'll just look at the hospital cookhouse, because there was three cookhouses. There was the hospital cookhouse, the men's cookhouse, and the officers' mess cookhouse. No, he says, I'll just have a look at the hospital kitchen, which was in a brick building, of course. The hospital was tented. And he walked in, he just looked around. And there was a couple of cooks on duty, and it was, oh, yo, no, yo, yes, right. Never said another word. And they showed him round the hospital, etc. Showed him where mess was and where his bunk would be and such like. He says, right, well, that'll do me for today. He says, I'll start tomorrow morning as I mean to go on. I thought, well, Lord, what's going to happen here? Because we didn't know naught about him then, you see. Anyway, after seeing the CO next morning, he came to me as wardmaster. And he says, right, I'm taking over the responsibility now for all the cookhouses. If you've anything you want knowing or anything else, he says, I'm the man to see. He says, where's the men's cookhouse? Oh, I says, it's over there. I said, I'll tell you what, I says, I've half an hour before CO's inspection, so I said, I'll take you over. So I took him over. And when we got there, these four cooks were there, stuffing themselves with breakfast. They had bacon and egg, Oh, everything. So I just looked at him and decided, right, I said, and what did the men have for breakfast this morning? Oh, it was porridge and sausage and beans. Oh, he said, and how come you're having bacon and egg then? And I didn't know what to say. I said, right, from now on, you eat exactly the same food as you prepare for the men.